Hello, and welcome to The Brief, a video podcast that looks at global news events and brings you perspective and analysis. I'm your host, Jim Clancy. As always, we appreciate a like or a follow, and you can find links to more of our episodes at this website, thebriefpodcast.org. Well, the ceasefire in Gaza has been threatened by continued Israeli attacks against not only Hamas, but civilians in the devastated enclave. While the U.S. administration continues to advocate for ethnic cleansing of Palestinians, hardliners within Israel are pressing for increased attacks and reveling in how President Trump doubled down on providing cover against international prosecutions for war crimes. Our guest on this edition of The Brief podcast is journalist Ahmed Al-Naouk. He has spearheaded a project that gives Palestinians the opportunity, ordinary Palestinians, to tell their stories to the world. Ahmed addresses some of the very key aspects of the ongoing genocide, including the need for a unified Palestinian leadership that could stand up to the threats against their very future. Ahmed, hello and welcome to The Brief. When we look at Gaza today, it can fairly be described as uninhabitable. It is completely destroyed. And yet, when people say, well, we'll move you to a better place, as Donald Trump has done, Palestinians resoundingly say no. Why?
Well, Jim, thank you very much for having me. First, I would like to remind you that a few years ago from now, the UN said that by 2020, Gaza will be uninhabitable. But nonetheless, the Palestinians continue to live. And now, after the genocide, it's much, 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 much worse. The situation in Gaza is very, very difficult. The vast majority of the houses are destroyed in Gaza. The vast majority of hospitals are destroyed. The vast majority of all of the universities in Gaza are destroyed. There is no water. There is no electricity. There is no... The pollution in Gaza is a huge problem. But nonetheless, the Palestinians want to stay in their homes. Do you know why? Because it's our home. We can go and travel and be all around the world, but eventually we need to go to our home. Nothing can replace home. And that's why I'm hearing from Palestinians in Gaza who have lost their homes, who have lost their careers, who have lost many family members. They're all saying that they want to stay in Gaza because Gaza is their home. And we will not go. We will not go anyway.
You talk about people having lost family members. You yourself, in December of 2023, you lost many members of your family in Gaza.
That's true. That's why, that was in October, actually. The 22nd of October, 2023, my family were sleeping in their home when suddenly an airplane came out of nowhere and dropped the bomb on my family, killing all my family members. Back then, I lost my father, my two brothers, three sisters, and all of their children. 14 kids were slaughtered in my home, and my cousin. Before that, Israel also killed my mother by not allowing her to receive a treatment for cancer. And before that, Israel also killed my brother. So I lost the vast majority of my family, so many relatives, so many cousins, I lost count. But I lost my home. I lost my flat and my father's family and our home that we lived and grew up in, and the house where we made all our memories, all our dreams, or our life was there. And I lost all of that, but nonetheless, I am eager to go to Gaza and live Gaza, even if I have to live on the rubble of my family in a tent, because it's my home.
You started a project called We Are Not Numbers. What is that all about?
Well, the problem that we are having in Palestine is that the mainstream media never represented the Palestinians very well. We have always been spoken over. We have never been given the agency or the narrative. It was always people from the outside come and talk about the Palestinians as if the Palestinians don't have any agency or they don't have any voice. So we realized this problem very early, and then we decided to start this project. And actually, the project was inspired by a story I wrote about my brother who Israel killed 10 years ago, in 2014. And back then, I was only 19 years old, and a friend of mine, a journalist, helped me edit the story I wrote about my brother. And then when we published that story, it was read by so many people, and that inspired me and Pam and other friends to start a project calling it We Are Not Numbers, in which we can train writers from Gaza to write their stories in the English language with the help of international mentors. And then we published these stories online. So over the past 10 years, after we we launched We Are Not Numbers. We published hundreds of stories from Gaza by people who are not a professional journalists or professional writers. They're just young budding writers in Gaza who are just eager to tell their stories to the world. This is what we do. We train our writers to write their stories and share it with the world because the Palestinians deserve to be heard. After everything that they have been through, they deserve to be heard, and their stories are very powerful. They're very talented people, and we just help them deliver their message to the world in a language that the world understands, in the English language.
You know, you bring all of this up at a time when there's two completely different ways this story is being covered in the mainstream media. When Israeli hostages, three at a time, are released, there's great focus on their lives, their loved ones, their situations, and it should be covered. It deserves to be covered. But for the Palestinians, no such coverage at all.
Well, that's what we are used to. This. The Palestinians have always been dehumanized. When Israeli people get killed, we find all the media talk about them, humanize them, tell their stories, as they should. I don't have any problem with the mainstream media go talk about the Israeli victims. But what about the Palestinian victims who have been 100 times over the Israelis? Listen, on the 7th of October, many Israelis were killed, and we found all the media, all the international media, go to Israel, cover the news, talk about the hostages, talk about the victims, talk about everything, and sometimes lie about what really happened. We heard about the 40 beheaded babies, you know about all of that, and the baby baked in an oven, and fabrications. They were magnified and they were distributed in a huge scale around the mainstream media. But over the next 15 months, the Palestinians have been going through hell. Israel has been raining down death and destruction on the people in Gaza on a daily basis, cutting down food, water, electricity, kidnapping, taking thousands of Palestinians from Gaza as hostages. And then the mainstream media did not dare to enter Gaza to report the news from Gaza, from the ground. So we are used to this, unfortunately. The Palestinians are always the bad ones. The Palestinians can die. It's okay. We are expendable. We can die. It's okay if the Palestinians die. Before the 7th of October, every day Israel would kill one or two or three Palestinians in the West Bank. Every day. Every day. The year 2023 was the deadliest year for the Palestinians in the West Bank. And the mainstream media never covers that. Do you know when they cover that? When there are bloodshed on the Israeli side. The Western mainstream media come and cover the news. And they would make a huge deal of any loss from the Israeli side. But the Palestinians can live in a prolonged occupation for 77 years. They can lose their lands in the West Bank every day with the settlements expanding there over year after year after year. That's expected of the Palestinians to be the perfect victims. We can die. We can be killed. We can be like my mother. We can die as cancer patients while waiting to travel outside of Gaza, and we're not allowed to do that. And the Palestinians can die in hundreds and thousands, hundreds of thousands. It's okay. And we will never get the coverage that we deserve. We will never get the airtime that we deserve. In the meantime, the Israelis are the sacred lives, and all lives are sacred. But there is huge discrepancy between how the way they cover Gaza and the way they cover Israel, unfortunately. It is because of this dehumanization that we have been talking all over in the media for the past 15 months.
Edward Said described it as, you have the misfortune of being the victims of victims. And the Holocaust always comes into play, and there's almost a competition, really, to see who's the biggest victim.
And that shouldn't be a competition.
One key thing here that has to change, and you talked about it, you said you have no agency. The Palestinians need a government. They need some central, unified voice that can represent them in the world. What's being done on that front?
Well, this is an eternal issue that we have been discussing, we have been talking about, and we have been...
But it's at this point in time, it's more crucial than it's ever been.
I agree with you. I totally agree with you. I'm not saying that the Palestinians are angels and they don't make any mistake. This is a huge mistake on the Palestinian side. A Palestinian unity between all the Palestinian factions is crucial, and it's more crucial than ever before. And this is something that we need to do. And there were so many attempts of reconciliation by China, by Algeria, by Turkey, by so many other countries trying to mediate between the Palestinians. We shouldn't need someone to mediate between us. I understand that. But also, let us not forget that we have reached this point because of Israel, because of the occupation, because the occupation is separating between us geographically. We have the Palestinians in the West Bank and the Palestinians in Gaza, and there's no way that we can connect with each other without crossing into Israel. And Israel has been banning Palestinians from visiting each other, from talking to each other, and they would punish. And even the PA, for example, if they want to do a reconciliation with Hamas or other Palestinian factions, they would be punished by Israel because they live under the Israeli occupation in the West Bank. So there is always this occupation that comes into the equation. It is not that we Palestinians have, we are the masters of our decision. There is always the occupation that interferes in our business. For example, a few years ago, the President Mahmoud Abbas said that there will be an election in the West Bank and Gaza and East Jerusalem so that the Palestinians can finally choose a leader. But what happened then? Israel banned the Palestinians from voting in East Jerusalem. And then the election were canceled. So I understand that there is a problem on the Palestinian side with the lack of unity. But at the same time, I think it is the occupation to be blamed here as well.
Well, right. But I think you'd agree that, you know, you can blame the occupation. And it's a fair point. It did play a role in all of this. Israel controls the Palestinians' very lives on the ground. Whether they're in Gaza, whether on the West Bank, East Jerusalem, doesn't matter. There's that level of control. This is what the Palestinians have to overcome. This is the challenge today. And people are asking, well, you know, who's going to lead it? I mean, you want Donald Trump to make the decisions for you? I mean, he says they're going to sit down and talk with all the parties that are involved. And, he, you know, he's clearly not thinking the Palestinians will be able to join in.
Well, I totally agree with you. The Palestinians need to decide. They need to have unity. I'm saying that this is something that we need to resolve. It's crucial, and it's a huge problem that we don't have any unity in Palestine. But I have to tell you that maybe the leaders of Palestine are not united right now, but the people, the Palestinian people, are united. And even the Palestinian factions, they all seek for the Palestinian liberation. They all seek for sovereignty and dignity. And we are united in some ways. And there are differences, and there would always be differences between some political parties. I mean, in the UK, we have the Labour and the Conservative, and they don't like each other at all, and they have a lot of differences. Eventually, sometimes differences can be healthy. But I agree with you. This is something the Palestinians need to resolve as soon as possible.
Also, as soon as possible, we have to get to phase two of this, the peace deal between Israel and the Palestinians, or Hamas and Israel. And there's a lot of doubts that this is going to go forward. Already, you've got extremists on the Israeli side that are anticipating restarting the war in Gaza, going back to the bombs and the bullets.
Of course, so just this morning, Israel bombed a vehicle for the police in Gaza. They have been killing Palestinians every day in Gaza, even after the ceasefire deal was announced. They have been killing Palestinians every single day for the past a few weeks. So Israel, we know that Israel is not interested in having a ceasefire deal, and we all know that Trump pushed them to accept this ceasefire deal. Israel wants to crush the Palestinians. From the beginning of this genocide, Israel made it clear that their goal is to ethnically cleanse the people from Gaza. And as long as there is Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, they will always want to resume the fighting. They would always want to break the ceasefire deal and do stuff here and there in order to blame the Palestinians. I just hope that the ceasefire deal will continue. The Palestinians are tired of this war. They're tired of this genocide. And I hope that the fighting will not continue, but I'm not very optimistic, to be honest.
When you look at the political scene around the world, what does it take? You've been involved in trying to tell Palestinians individual stories for years as you train young writers. What works? What changes people's minds, do you find?
Well, if I want to be bluntly honest with you, unfortunately, what managed to change people's life is a bloodshed. It is always when the Palestinians die in huge numbers, people start to look at the Palestinians. And I hate that. I don't want people to look at the Palestinians and hear their stories when there is a bloodshed. We are people who deserve to be to live in dignity and freedom without having to die just for the world to attract the world's attentions. The Palestinians, for the past 60 or 70 years, we have tried everything in order to resolve this conflict, in order to regain our freedom and dignity. With Fatah in the 60s and 70s, they tried the armed resistance, didn't work. And then they went to the Oslo Accords and the peace negotiations, didn't work. Israel never wanted a peace. Israel never wanted to have a resolution where Palestinians and Israelis can live together in the same land. They just want all of the land for themselves. And thus, we in Gaza, we Hamas tried the wars with Israel. They were pushed to war. And Hamas believes in the armed resistance against Israel. But it never worked. We tried the March of Return in Gaza, where hundreds of thousands of people protest weekly at the borders, at the fence with Israel. And we have been shot. We have been killed. We have been living under genocide. We have been living under siege. We have tried everything, unfortunately. And the world is not paying any attention to the plight of the Palestinians. And the only time that we see that there is a huge attention to the people in Gaza when there is a genocide in Gaza. So it took a genocide so the world can understand and see.
Some in the world do not accept that it is a genocide.
You have the West that doesn't accept it as a genocide, but we're talking about the Western governments, not the Western people. I mean, I live here in the UK and I see that the vast majority of the people here, they accept it as a genocide and they are horrified with what they see. And I've seen them protest weekly, like for the past 16 months, they protest weekly calling for a ceasefire in Gaza and they condemn Israel. But of course, unfortunately, the Western governments, they do not live up to their responsibilities. The responsibilities of representing their own people.
You know, that's a very good point, that one thing that has been accomplished here, and, you know, it goes even beyond the Palestinian people alone, although they are at the center of it, and that is it's pointed up the hypocrisy where, you know, the West, you know, announces that they're for human rights, as Joe Biden did when he came into office, and then they stand for something completely different in reality. And that has been exposed, as has, you know, the mainstream media for failing to cover the story.
Yeah. Well, one thing that the genocide in Gaza managed to accomplish is to reveal the hypocrisy of the West. And when I say the West, I'm not talking about the people of the West. I'm talking about the governments of the West. The Western governments have always preached to us about the international law, the human rights and the full application of the international law and all of that. And then at the first test, they all failed. All the masks are off. All of them are off. They have proved to the world that for them, when they talk about equality and human rights, they talk about one type or certain type of people, not everyone. It is, as George Orwell said in The Animal Farms, all animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than other. And here we say all human beings are equal, but some human beings are equal than others. Unfortunately, it's been clear that, you know, the America, what is the business of America to send weapons and bombs day and night for Israel to kill the Palestinians? Why is America killing us? Why is the British government killing us, the Palestinians? What have we done to deserve genocide and punishment like this? And I don't know. But what we know is that there is hypocrisy.
I don't think anybody has the answer to that. It's to do with, I guess, political power and other functions. But one of the most important things in all of this has been the way that people have tried to tell the story of Gaza, tried to tell, you know, when everything was shut down, journalists not permitted to go inside, Western media anyway. Palestinian journalists have stepped up and tried to tell that story, and they have paid a very dear price.
205 Palestinian journalists were killed intentionally by the Israeli forces during this genocide.
And that's not counting their family members.
That's not counting their family members. We have so many friends who lost many of their family members. Waled Dahdour lost his wife and his children. Many others were killed with their family members. And this is the price that we're paying so that the world understands and sees what's happening in Gaza. And I'm telling you, without these Palestinian journalists who've been covering the genocide, no one would know what's happening in Gaza, because Gaza was under complete blackout. No journalists allowed to enter, no electricity, no internet connection. And the Palestinian journalists took it upon themselves to risk their own lives to tell the message of the Palestinians to the world. And we owe them a lot. They were our ears and our eyes. And without them, we wouldn't know what was happening in Gaza.
They've written a story, really, for the history books. It is a history, a living history, that they carry with them. And I say, as I said, they paid a terrible price. The world needs to recognize that it was the record year for the number of journalist deaths, 2024. Two-thirds of them were killings that were done by Israel. So that just puts into focus where we are in human history. And at least in the history of journalism, some unprecedented things have happened. What's happening with that record, do you think? The record that those journalists gave us.
What will happen to this record? It will be, I don't know. What will happen to the other records that they broke before? The record of the largest number of resolutions issued against one country from the UN. Or the UN Security Council, or the condemnation from the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva. How many condemnations against Israel were? And Israel doesn't care, as long as Israel has the power to continue their occupation and the support of the West, nonetheless, despite everything that they can do. Who cares?
They need impunity to do that. They need that diplomatic cover that they get from the United States and from European countries. They give them that kind of diplomatic cover. But already we're seeing some countries breaking ranks, saying that they will, for instance, they would arrest Benjamin Netanyahu, who's already had an arrest warrant issued for him by the International Criminal Court.
Do you think that some European countries will arrest Netanyahu if he steps foot in their countries? I don't think so.
Well, I think that it's a possibility. I think more likely is that he just won't go to those places. They will, like Italy has said that it would not arrest him. Ireland, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, but it's not only Benjamin Netanyahu and Yoav Gallant who committed war crimes in Gaza. There are thousands and thousands of people. There are soldiers who we know, and we know their names, who committed the war crimes in Palestine. So our problem is not Netanyahu. Even if he gets arrested, our problem is not Netanyahu. Someone else, someone worse, will come to power in Israel. And he will continue, or she will continue, whatever Netanyahu was doing in Gaza. Unfortunately, the Israeli community, the Israeli society, is on the far right in the Israeli society is on the rise. And we're not expecting to resolve all the issue if Netanyahu gets arrested or not. This is a minor detail, unfortunately. And we have seen that Netanyahu went to America and he was greeted by the most powerful country in the world, president of the world, Donald Trump, and he promised him to give him all the restricted weapons that the previous administration held. So, but the situation right now, as I see it, the present time is very bleak. We're living a very existential time. It's very bleak, it's very dark, but at the same time, I know that in the future, the world will not forget what happened. Now we are recording history. As you said, this is a history, and history is being recorded right now. And I'm telling you, everything that happened in Gaza will not be forgotten. What we have seen, we can never unsee them. What we have heard, we can never unhear that. The image and the footage from Gaza that emerged of little kids being shredded, decapitated, real decapitated babies. The pictures that we saw of our universities, of our homes, of our fathers and brothers and sisters being slaughtered, thousands of them. We will never forget that. And history will record that. And maybe it's not in my lifetime or your lifetime that Palestine will be free, but there will be some time where the world will wake up and the conscience of the people will wake up and they will see Israel for what it really is. a country that committed genocide against people that it occupied and besieged for the past 77 years. So I'm very optimistic about the future, but not the near future.
Ahmed Alnouch, I want to thank you very much for being with us and sharing your viewpoints, talking with us about your project, We Are Not Numbers. Important thoughts, all of them, and we will remember.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for joining us. Please explore many of our other episodes of The Brief Podcast. You can find all of that on YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Give us a like or subscribe. For a complete listing, you can get more information at thebriefpodcast.org. For now, I'm Jim Clancy, and you've been briefed.